You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Okay, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program, ladies and gentlemen. This is Mike Newcomb substituting yet for Tom, and a little bit of an update here. I will also be substituting for Tom tomorrow as well, completing the week. So, again, I appreciate the opportunity to fill in some pretty big shoes here right now. So before we get to our guest who's on the line right now, you know him. He's a regular on the program, the Tom Hartman Program. His name is John Nichols. Let me just give you some of the vital statistics, my friends, if you want to participate in today's program. The phone number for the Freedom Lines, I love to call them Freedom Lines because that's what they are, okay? We do not discriminate on our Freedom Lines. Anybody can call. Doesn't matter if you're from the left or the right, somewhere in between. Doesn't matter if you're Republican, Independent, Libertarian, Democrat, doesn't matter if you're Green Party, no party. You can be a Christian, you can be a Mormon, you can be a Jew, you can be an atheist. Anybody gets a chance to call on the Freedom Line. So, that being said, the phone number is 1-866-987-TOM, T-H-O-M. Again, that's 1-866-987-8466. Also, I got plenty of emails yesterday. I'll try to share some of those today. If you want to contact a good doctor, you can actually send an email to Mike, M-I-K-E, at MikeNewcomb.net. So lots to talk about today. Full pack, jam-packed things going on. But first, let's get to our esteemed guest, John Nichols from The Nation. And let me just get him up here on the board right now. And we will be talking to John in just 2 seconds. John, how are you?
I am great, brother. How are you doing?
It's good to have you back again. It's just kind of a little regular thing now.
Yeah.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, listen, we want to talk a little bit today about a man by the name of Congressman Paul Ryan, who is becoming more and more known throughout the American public here, and maybe for the right reasons, maybe for the wrong reasons. But, John, tell us a little bit about Congressman Ryan and perhaps not only his ties to Romney, but perhaps his ties and his family's ties to a former company that Romney was the CEO and chairman of, Bain Capital.
Yeah, this is really a pretty fascinating twist on the Paul Ryan story, because who would have thunk it, you know, that of all the venture capitalist firms in America, of all the, you know, kind of crony capitalist connections that could be made, that Paul Ryan would actually have a close family tie to Bain & Company, the consulting firm that spawned Bain Capital, and that Mitt Romney described as his favorite place to work. Turns out that Paul's older brother, with whom Paul remains very, very close, Tobin Ryan, was a member of the staff of Bain and Company before joining in 2010, joining another venture capitalist firm. And in fact, the fascinating thing is that Tobin Ryan, who's been doing lots of appearances on behalf of Paul Ryan, has spoken in great detail about, you know, his work as a venture capitalist. He is, in fact, a Mitt Romney Jr., if you will. And
interesting.
This makes it a remarkable ticket, because we've never in our history of the United States had a ticket where both candidates were either personally or via close family ties involved with venture capitalism.
Let's explore this a little bit, John, because my understanding, and I watched this just last night on one of the cable networks, I think it was on MSNBC, but apparently Paul Ryan acted as though when he was on the campaign trail with Mitt Romney, just making some appearances prior to actually becoming the nominee, the vice presidential nominee, that they didn't really kind of know each other, and they kind of sort of started to like each other and spend more time, and they would go to diners and this and that and joke around, and, you know, all of a sudden they were buddy-buddy, and they kind of just gelled all of a sudden just within the last month or two. I mean, from what you're telling me now, because my understanding is he's very, very close with his brother. I mean, I know after his dad died.
They live just down the street from each other.
Right. They live down the street. They do dinners together. The kids, you know, go to school together, if I'm not mistaken.
They do.
Yeah. So explore that. Tease that out for us a little bit. I mean, are they being a little bit disingenuous, perhaps, about the relationship of Paul Ryan and Mitt Romney?
Well, I think there's more, and I think we should look at it from a couple different directions. First off, they have known each other for much more than just a month or so.
Right.
And they have ties that go back, political ties that go back quite a bit. Remember that Paul Ryan has been a mover and shaker in the upper levels of the Republican congressional establishment for the better part of a decade, almost since he came to Congress. He's very, very closely tied to a lot of the key political players, going back to his days as a congressional aide. So the notion that he and Romney are kind of just starting to figure out that the other one exists is comic.
Like love at first sight.
But there's something more to this, and I think this is the important part. The venture capitalist connection, the fact that both of these guys have such close ties to venture capitalism. Forget about whether it's Bain. I mean, it happens that it is Bain, which is quite remarkable. But forget that it's Bain and just think of this as a very, very small constituency. Really the 0.1% very, very wealthy people who make their money by sitting on a pool of cash until they find a very vulnerable place to put it, moving the cash in fast, buying a company, tearing the company apart, taking the profitable parts, and greatly enriching themselves. So imagine, understand, that both Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan have very, very close ties to this community. They are in many senses of it, or at least closely connected to it. Then take a look at Paul Ryan's budget plan, especially look at the original plan that he wrote in 2010, his Roadmap for America's Future. You will find item after item after item that is especially beneficial to the venture capitalists, as Rick Perry referred to them, vulture capitalist community. All sorts of changes in rules that take taxation off savings, that take taxation off investments, that allow corporations to immediately deduct, not depreciate, but immediately deduct investments. All of these things are just a bonanza for the venture capitalist community. And it's a fascinating situation. Imagine if we turn this around, if we said, well, we've got two candidates on the Democratic ticket. Both of them are, one of them's the former president of a labor union. The other one, his brother, was a top leader in a labor union, and he's always voted the labor line. You know exactly what conservative media would be saying about it. They say, these guys are completely sold out to organized labor. You can't trust them to have the public interest. You know, they're so clearly identified with one narrow community. Well, here we have a much more narrow community, and we've got Romney and Ryan totally identified with it.
Let me ask you this, John, because this you just sparked sort of a thought in my mind right now, because Mitt Romney has been very reluctant to release his tax returns. He's only released one official year, and the second year is pending at this point. Apparently, in the vetting process, Congressman Ryan had to release multiple years of tax returns, more than actually Romney himself is the presidential candidate has released thus far. So my question to you is this. If there seems to now be familial ties between the Romneys and the Ryans, in particular with respect to Bain Capital, is this perhaps why Romney and to a certain extent Ryan are refusing to reveal their tax returns? Because there could be economic things where they're both tied together that they can benefit from at the expense of other people.
Well, it's a very creative leap you've made there. And it's certainly not beyond the realm of possibility as we start to see what some of the financial press is really making a big deal about, you know, this intriguing linkage in a narrow, narrow, small community. But
interesting.
I don't think it's quite that close. I think, you know, look, Bain & Company is a big firm.
All right, hey, John, do me a favor. Why don't you hold on for a second? We'll conclude the interview when we get back. Yeah. I just got to go to a break right now. Okay, 15 minutes after the hour, we'll be back with more of the Tom Hartman Show in a moment. Stay with us.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Okay, welcome back. 20 minutes after the hour, the good Dr. Mike Newcomb here sitting in for Tom Hartman today and tomorrow. And we appreciate everybody for calling in at 1-866-987-TOM, T-H-O-M. We'll get to your calls in a second. But let me conclude our interview here. We're with John Nichols, the Washington correspondent from The Nation magazine and also author of Uprising. So, John, welcome back.
It's good to be back, Jeff. It's good to be talking about this topic. It's an important one.
No, absolutely. Well, let's just finish up here though, too, because I wanted to talk
on that. You were raising a very important question of, just how deep this tie goes. And I want to emphasize, Bain and Company, Bain Capital are big operations, and Mitt Romney moved between them. We have to be cautious about suggesting that Mitt Romney was working day to day with Tobin Ryan, Paul Ryan's brother. I don't think that's the case, but I think that the more important, far, far more important thing is that both of these families have intimate ties to one venture capitalist company. And that while I doubt that Paul Ryan personally profited off Bain Capital, although it'd be interesting to check some of that in his tax returns, what we do know is that Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan's family made great amounts of money because of venture capitalism. And now these two men are seeking the presidency and the vice presidency of the United States on a platform that says they want to do a whole lot more to enrich venture capitalists. And I think that it's credible for voters to say, hey, do we really think it's a good idea to put our entire executive branch in the hands of people who are so intimately tied to this particular industry, which an awfully lot of folks, including some conservative Republicans, think doesn't do a whole lot of good for America.
No, it's like the fox guarding the hens or the sheep. It doesn't sound like it's in the best interest of the American people. Let me ask you this one last question, though, John, as far as the tax returns go, because you look at Mitt Romney's father. He released, almost a decade's worth of tax returns. I saw former Governor Michael Dukakis on TV last night and also former presidential candidate for the Democratic Party. He released at least 6 years of tax returns. So we're looking anywhere between 6 to 10 to 12 years of tax returns is sort of the norm, if you will. But even his wife, Mitt Romney's wife, was on TV saying, guess what? That's it. We're done. We've released one year. You're lucky if you get the next year. And we're just not going to release it, she said, because every time we release a tax return, we're asked questions. I mean, it's almost like royalty. Like the king and the queen will not be questioned, by their subjects. We've done the bare minimum that we feel we need to do. So how much pressure is going to be put on Romney in these ensuing 80-plus days until the official election to release more tax returns, and do you think ultimately he'll have to capitulate and submit more tax returns to the American people?
I think there'll be a lot of pressure put on, and there should be. We shouldn't deviate away from this issue because it goes to a core question of America. Do we have an American royalty that gets to operate by different rules from everyone else? And understand it just in this simple way. If John McCain had been elected president in 2008, and had nominated Mitt Romney to serve as Secretary of the Treasury or as Secretary of Commerce in a cabinet position, the U.S. Senate, in its confirmation process, would have demanded more tax returns than Mitt Romney has released to the U.S. people. So what we have to recognize is what we're talking about here is not something unreasonable. We're saying that Mitt Romney should be held to the same standard as someone who Mitt Romney might appoint to a public position. And to deny that information to the American people before they vote is really a creation of a superclass in our politics that imposes rules but doesn't have to follow rules. So I think it's a vital issue and it should be framed in that way. Now, will Mitt Romney resist? At this point, with only 85 days to go, 84 days to go, I think he probably will. I think they will try to hold out through the rest of the campaign because it's now become such a big deal that upon the release of those returns, there is going to be an examination of them. There should be. And it will reveal, I think we all know what it will reveal, that in years when most Americans were struggling just to get by, Mitt Romney was making tens of millions of dollars and paying little or no tax on net income.
No doubt about
it. It's a legit issue in American politics. And now that we have a president and a vice president with ties to the venture capital community, a community that doesn't like to pay taxes, I think this becomes all the more important because we ought to look at the advantages and the breaks that Mitt Romney took advantage of in his tax returns and ask ourselves whether we really want a president and a vice president who will create more advantages and tax breaks for people like them.
No, no doubt about it. Well, listen, John, as always, trenchant insight into what's going on in these campaigns and politics, so we appreciate your time on the air, and people can check out John Nichols at www.thenation.com. So thanks for your time today, John.
It's great to be on with you. Great conversation.
All right. Thank you, sir. Okay. Well, listen, speaking of royalty, speaking of all of these issues that we just spoke about with respect to Romney and Ryan and the inordinate amount of wealth that both of them have accumulated disproportionately, Mitt Romney, I was doing a little surfing yesterday because remember, Eric, we were talking to the libertarian Ron Bailey from Reason.com
right. Yep.
yesterday, and I still contend that the corporate system in America, as it currently is structured in our capitalistic system, is definitely, definitely corrupt. There's no question in my mind.
Of course, yes.
And basically what John Nichols was talking about is how everything is favored towards the corporations. All the rules and all the regulations are created such that they have an upper hand when it comes to business. They have an upper hand when it comes to the little guy trying to compete with Goliath, all right, David versus Goliath. And that's unfortunately the way capitalism works today. So my whole point was that, look, these CEOs, particularly a healthcare CEO and a private health insurance company, makes $100 million a year in compensation versus doctors and nurses and other providers get peanuts compared to these guys, and they're just paper pushers. So I did a little research last night to see kind of where does CEO pay stand right now, and I'm going to talk to you about that when I get back. 27 minutes after the hour. This is the Tom Hartman Show.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Alrighty, let's hear. That's a little Stevie Wonder here, right?
Oh yeah, good song.
Love this song. So listen to it a little bit there. All right, there we have it.
We don't have the controls.
Oh, we don't have the controls. There we go. It's good to get into the music, though, sometimes, too. I mean, music is a very visceral thing. Gets people pumped up, especially when you got the Stevie Wonder out there. All right, listen, it is 34 minutes after the hour. Mike Newcomb here sitting in for Tom Hartman right now. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program, and we're broadcasting from our flagship station here in Phoenix, Arizona, 1480 KPHX. We got a full board of callers. I'm going to get to you guys. I love when you guys call, and I do my best to get everybody on the air. We got Ray on the line from Portland, Mark from San Francisco, Steve from Central Pennsylvania. We got somebody from Buchanan, Texas, Rochester, New York, Donovan, Merrill. I mean, Tom's like all over the country here.
Yeah.
And I mean, worldwide, isn't he?
I'm pretty sure, yeah.
Look from my understanding, he's like in
Tom Hartman
seven countries somewhere. And
something like that. He's on all the different continents, yeah.
Oh, my lordy. All right, well, in any case, we will get to all your calls in a second here. But before I do that, the Freedom Line is 1-866-987-TOM, T-H-O-M. That's 1-866-987-8466. But I want to get back to this article that I came upon about corporate CEOs. It's entitled, Bush Tax Cuts Saved 57 CEOs More Than $1 Million Each Last Year. Now, we all know what happened with the Bush tax cuts. You know, they were sort of sunset provisions in that so that they were expire at the end of this particular year, okay? However, you know, when this first happened, you know that the Republican Party, when they said they agreed to the sunset provisions, that they were not going to let it just go off into the sunshine. They were going to fight it to the nail and try to extend the Bush-era tax cuts. Well, lo and behold, no surprise to us, that's exactly what they're trying to do right now. They're trying to now say, hey, we need these tax cuts. We need to extend them. We need it for the economy, despite the fact that we all know these are failed policies. Okay, look, we've been cutting taxes ever since Reagan almost every single year. I mean, if you look at the actual tax cuts over the last several decades, it's incredible what the top tax rate has gone from. I mean, if you go back, you know, even further, there used to be a time when wealthy people, after, say, like the first $1 million or so, would pay up to 90% income tax on everything after $1 million. So you would pay the normal tax rate in the first $1 million, but after that, you'd pay up to 90%. So now that tax rate is dramatically lower. Okay, dramatically lower. Now, the Republicans want to continue not only to keep these tax cuts in effect, but Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan want to further reduce the tax burden on the wealthy. And this goes back to what I was talking to you about yesterday when I was talking to Ron Bailey from Reason.com, how as a physician, I spent my time 4 years working my butt off at NYU studying day in, day out, you know, to get good grades, to take those science courses, to meet my prerequisites, to take the test to get into medical school, the MCAT, Medical College Admission Test, then go to 4 years of medical school, study my butt off for them for 4 years, then go to an internal medicine residency for another 3 years. I mean, you're talking, Eric, literally about finishing high school and going back and starting all over again.
A big part of your life.
For 12 years, right. So we as physicians, many people in the healthcare community, really have worked hard. We're not fat, lazy, welfare, you know, people living high off
welfare
the hog.
Mimic.
Yeah, the welfare mom is like they like to refer to people as. You know, we worked hard. We worked diligently. You know, I got student loans out. I paid for my particular education. Okay, nobody gave me a handout. I had to take loans and had to work hard, pay those loans off, which I just recently got paid off. So the long and short of it is this. So now I become a doctor, okay? And, yes, doctors do get reimbursed well. There's no question about that. But the point is, look at these CEOs. And I told you about some of the CEOs in particular. You look at the guy, I think, from Humana, Mike McAllister. I think his compensation is $50 to $100 million a year. And for what? I mean, you know, look, I'm sure he's a good guy. I'm sure, you know, he runs a good business. But the point is, why is somebody who's not even a doctor, not even delivering care to the people, making $50 to $100 million a year when a doctor might make a few hundred thousand dollars? To me, I think that is the grotesque nature of modern day capitalism. Okay, I'm not saying you need to put caps on anyone's salary. I'm not saying that at all. But I am saying there is such a thing as going overboard, grotesqueness. And if the free market is supposed to work the way that conservatives and libertarians say it is, with the invisible hand from Adam Smith, the wealth of nations, well, then people should get compensated appropriately in a free market for the services that they perform. You know, I am all for a fair dollar for the fair amount of work that you put in. But the way that the capitalist system is set up right now is absolutely 100% rigged. So let me give you some statistics, okay? This guy, James Mulva, he is the CEO of ConocoPhillips, okay? According to the reports here, his taxable pay for 2011, $145 million, okay? $145 million for one man. Now, on top of that, you put the Bush tax cuts, because Bush lowered the rate, okay? He now is the recipient of an additional $6,699,780 in tax savings because of Bush. Now, my question to you, Eric, is this. If you're making $145 million...
Do you need the extra $600?
Honest to God. Honest to God. Do you really need the extra...
Do you even notice it, Mike? Do you even notice it in your bank account?
I mean, is James Mulva going to be going home if the Bush tax cuts are not extended,
whining about his
and going to his wife and like just basically sulking and honey, I got some really bad news. I got really bad news, sweetie.
We can't buy a new Rolls Royce.
Right, right. The wife's gonna be like, well, do you have cancer? Are you okay? Did the doctor say something? No. On the contrary, James Mulva is going to be saying to his wife, honey, we're out $6-7 million because they didn't extend the Bush tax cuts. I don't know what to do. I mean, this is how insane these conservative Republicans are. Absolutely insane. Okay, another example, CBS, Leslie Moonves. Okay, here's another guy. He's a pauper compared to James Mulva. I mean, I feel for Leslie Moonves because his taxable pay, Eric, was only $82 million last year.
Oh.
I mean, he's obviously not a player. I mean, this
right.
guy is...
Les Moonves is not a player.
He's not a player. I mean, when it comes to James Mulva, I mean, Les Moonves is you know, chicken...
Scratch,
yes. Okay, so, but that being said, $82 million for Les Moonves, okay, taxable pay 2011. According to the Bush tax cuts, he gets an additional $3.7 million as a result of the Bush tax cuts. And I'll just give you three other examples here, but you get the picture. You got, I'll give you two other examples. Jeffrey Boyd from Priceline, okay, $73 million in income last year. Again.
That's crazy. Priceline makes that kind of dough?
Yeah. I wonder what the other guy gets, Shatner.
Yeah, I mean, he got in on the ground floor, didn't
right.
he?
Right. I think he should get more. I mean, he's the guy who does the commercials.
Right.
He's the guy who's creating the brand. He's the guy, you know, who's famous. But in any case.
Maybe he does get more. How do you know?
Well, maybe he does. We'll have to see. But he gets $3.3 million in tax cuts. And then also Ronald Johnson, JCPenney, okay? And from my understanding, JCPenney, just like Sears and some of these other companies, aren't doing quite that well, okay? So, and that's the other thing that's ridiculous about our capitalistic system is that you have CEOs, part of companies, Eric, who actually lose money in years, whose stock depreciates,
huge salaries.
But get huge.
Maybe they wouldn't be losing money if they didn't take such high pay.
Right, or high risk. But see, you never hear conservative Republicans or libertarians talk about the fairness in that. You know, how is it that a guy at a publicly traded company who performs poorly gets tens of millions, and in these cases, over $100 million of compensation, taxable pay in a year? That would never happen in the real private sector. I mean, could you imagine, Eric, if you're running your business, Consolidated Media, and you got an employee and they just completely screw up, and they come to you, hey, can you increase my pay by 5 or 10 times what you're paying me right now, even though I'm doing a crappy job, you know?
I would say, I'm sorry, I'm taking all the money myself. I can't give you any more.
Right, exactly. So
I'm paying myself $100 million a year. I can't give you anything.
This is the whole point, is that it's absolutely greed. It's absolute greed. It's absolute inordinate amounts of pay. And like I said to Ron Bailey, who had no answer to my question yesterday, why is it that we allow this to happen in the capitalistic system? Why don't we hold these publicly traded companies accountable to the shareholders? And look, I got all kinds of crazy emails from people saying, well, you know, there's a difference between, you know, preferred share and common share and this and that. Bottom line is this. The normal person, you or I, if we want to invest our money in the stock market, I guarantee you we have absolutely no stake.
That's because you're going to be part of the 49%.
Right. You'll never be there's no such thing as shareholders actually being the majority of the shareholders and having voting control, too.
And if that were the case, these people would not be making those salaries.
No, they wouldn't be, because then you can get one vote, one share, one vote, and then the majority rules. Yes, you should have a board, you know, to sort of steer the ship, if you will. You always need, you know, a captain. But guess what? When a captain or somebody is doing evil things in a ship, it's called a mutiny, right? And usually they can
walk the plank.
Right, you walk the plank. But you can't have CEOs today walking the plank, because the rules and regulations are rigged as such as that they pick their own board, whether it's 12 people or 20 people. It's like a mafia, basically. You're a made man. You know, you'll do what I tell you to do. Okay. You want to be part of the inner circle. You're a made man. You do what I tell you to do. You don't do it, you're done. You're out of here. Okay.
That's an offer you can't refuse.
Right. And an offer you can't refuse. And that's what happens. That's the way corporate boards work in America today, because shareholders have absolutely no say whatsoever. So make no bones about it. That's why I wanted to tell you today about the CEOs and the beneficiaries of the Bush tax cuts, people making $145 million, $82 million, and getting an additional $4 million. Come on. Let's put some sanity back into the system. 45 minutes after the hour, back with more of the Tom Hartman program in a moment.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Okay, this is from Jimi Hendrix. No, but it was Kim Basinger and the scene from Austin Powers. Wayne's World, that's what it was. Wayne's World, yes. That was a great scene. Remember that one?
I do.
Yes, no doubt about it. She lives here in Arizona, actually, I believe.
Does she?
Kim Basinger in Tucson.
Really, where?
If I'm not mistaken. Yeah, where, exactly. Right, stop it. Stop your stalking here.
I'm no stalker.
All right. In any case, 50 minutes after the hour here, this is the Tom Hartman Program. Dr. Mike here sitting in for Tom right now, and we do have a special guest on the line. I'm going to get to that guest in one quick second, but I just wanted to give you a follow-up, and then I'll get to the calls as well, on the CEO pay that I talked to you about. Just digest this and let this percolate in your brain for a little bit. CEO pay, okay, in the recent decades, skyrocketed. skyrocketed compared to the average typical American worker. Eric, it would take, if you were to look at the average CEO's salary right now, an annual salary, what they can make in 1 year, the average CEO, it would take a regular worker 200, like you, it would take you 244 years to actually achieve that kind of earnings. 244 years you'd have to work to get 1 year of CEO pay.
Yeah, I don't even think I'm going to make it to 60. So that's
See, this is why we got to get that guy from yesterday back on the show, Ron Bailey, who's talking about extending the lifespan.
The libertarian man?
Yeah, because then you'd be able to make what a CEO can make in 1 year if you could live to 250 years.
Right.
Right? So then you could still work at the same wages, but over your lifespan, you would make what the CEO made in 1 year.
By the time you have accumulated all that money, you're dead. So what's the point?
Well, but then you could say, I make what a CEO makes in 1 year. All right. But over the last 30 years, too, CEO pay has increased 127 times faster than worker pay. Okay. So this is why we have an increasing income disparity between the really, really haves, the top 1%, as John Nichols referred to it, the 0.01%, and everybody else. And it's something that we as a nation have to address, because if we don't address it, quite frankly, and you look back to history, this is how great empires ultimately collapse. When you look at ancient Greece and you look at the other Rome, this is what happens. But listen, let's get to our guest right now. I digress right now. We do have Donald Goldmacher on right now as we speak. And if you haven't heard about Donald, Donald is the co-director and co-producer of Heist, Who Stole the American Dream? And that also is narrated by Tom Hartman. It's opening it limitedly in a limited fashion nationally and being released Friday, August 17th in New York and Los Angeles in the following theaters, and will expand to new markets following the initial limited release. Those theaters are New York, the Quad Cinema, as well as Los Angeles, the Lemley NoHo 7. So without further ado, let's get to our guest right now, Donald Goldmacher. Donald, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, Donald, it's great to have you here, and this just dovetails exactly to what we were talking about previously. So tell us about the movie. Give us a short sort of biopic of what it's all about, and then we'll get to more stuff.
Well, the movie dovetails very nicely with what you were just talking about. It's really an analysis, a connecting the dots analysis of how the middle and working class have been destroyed over the last 30 to 40 years, and with the ascendancy of the top tenth of 1% in terms of that elite number of people who are that wealthy, but also the ascendancy of corporate domination over our politics, our democracy, and over the workplace in a way so that unions have been essentially destroyed in the private sector, and now they're going after the public sector. And all of this is covered in our film, including the coming attack on Social Security and Medicare. So we start with the Powell memo, which most Americans have no idea was written 40 years ago confidentially for the U.S. Chamber of Commerce by a soon-to-be-appointed Supreme Court justice who, when he was on the court, began to push the court toward corporate personhood, which ultimately resulted in Citizens United 2 years ago.
Right.
I'm sure all your listeners are familiar with that. But it all starts in August 1971 with a secret memo commissioned by the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, who was trying to figure out how to stop unions, how to stop regulation, and how to stop the political turmoil that was happening in the country. And just, you know, as a little add-on, in the Powell memo, he targets Ralph Nader very, very specifically, along with academia, along with the mass media, and says we need a full frontal assault by corporations, and that corporations need to get organized into one coalition that will take on all of its enemies, and that it should show no mercy to any of these enemies.
What about the regulation? I had a guest yesterday, and we were talking about the concept of regulation, and he was of the ilk that, hey, you know, I get government out of the way, and everything falls into place magically. How does the movie address the role of government in actually promoting a capitalism that is fair, that is honest, and that people can compete on an equal footing?
Well, in fact, we do address it very very definitively, because we've got a number of people talking about deregulation, including the former CEO of American Airlines, Robert Crandall, who was there when they deregulated the airline industry in 1977. He says that's been a debacle and that deregulation overall has been a debacle. He talks about deregulation of media. Robert Kuttner talks about deregulation of the financial industry, including the dismantling of Glass-Steagall and the allowance of derivatives to take hold, resulting in our 2008 crash of not only the stock market, but the housing market, et cetera, and credit market. So our film really does connect all these dots about deregulation and about the attack on government in general. And we have that famous quote from Ronald Reagan's inaugural speech, sure, where he says that government is not the solution, government is the problem.
Right, and no doubt about it.
That's the starting point of all this, really. That's the chant. And ever since then, the right wing of this country, allied with the Republican Party, has taken that as its chant,
and run with it.
Not only must we regulate government,
hey, Don,
we must keep cutting taxes.
All right, that sounds good. Don, I got to get running right now, but we appreciate your time on the air. It's www.heistthemovie.com. Thanks a lot.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Okay, welcome back to the show, the program, I should say, the Tom Hartman Program. This is Dr. Mike Newcomb sitting in today and tomorrow for Tom Hartman, and we have a special guest on the line right now. We were just talking about how conservatives and Republicans love to rig the systems, whether it's financial systems, whether it's the Medicare system, but to me, the most egregious, unconscionable assault that you can ever have on a democracy is if you try to rig an election, and that is happening widespread across the country right now. So I want to bring on the line right now. His name is Cliff Schechter. Okay, Cliff is the National Progressive PR Strategist for Libertas LLC. He also is a syndicated columnist and author, and you can check him out on his website, www.libertasllc.com. So without further ado, let's welcome to the table Cliff. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, it's great to have you, Cliff. Well, listen, you know, back in my home state of Pennsylvania, we got some egregious things going on. Also, not too far from Pennsylvania, Ohio. Get the we the people up to date on this horrible assault on democracy called rigging elections.
Yeah, I mean, you know, obviously it's one of the most fundamental rights, and it seems that the Republican Party, which if we go over it, and we often do, is pretty much demographically dead. Unless they can find a way to return to the good old days of 95-year-old white guys being the key electorate.
Right.
You know, they're headed in the wrong direction. They're losing single women. They're losing Hispanic voters and others. And many people know that. So what they've done is, first you had this law in Pennsylvania, which sadly this Judge Simpson upheld today, who is a Republican hack in a robe. I think a lot of people suspected he might do this. And those that were taking away the rights of people to vote and requiring people to have an ID to vote, of course, have presented zero cases, and they admitted this, of voter fraud. The Republican House, State House Majority Leader admitted they were doing this so that Romney could carry the state. You wouldn't really need a lot more evidence. And I, as somebody, I have connection to both of these states you're talking about. I lived in Philadelphia where I went to college, and I was able to vote there because they wanted to get people who were living in state and had an interest in what happened in the state to be able to vote. Now, Philadelphia, which is only, I think, after Boston in terms of the number of colleges per square mile,
sure,
you've got all these young people being disenfranchised who are there. You've got African Americans and poor, lower income people who are being disenfranchised, and they're doing this on purpose. I mean, they admitted it, so there's obviously no question. And sadly, right now, it looks like there's going to be chaos there. Ohio, it's a little bit of a better situation. I mean, not certainly perfect, but here, because of all the pressure, they were going to allow here different counties to decide how late to keep the polling open during the early voting period now, not now, but coming up, whether they could keep open on weekends. And, of course, shockingly, Republicans in areas like Cuyahoga County, where Cleveland is, and Hamilton County, where Cincinnati is, and the big cities, were voting to close, to only do business hours during the week. And the more rural, whiter, conservative counties, they were voting to have late-night hours and weekend hours. Well, I guess there was enough pressure because the Secretary of State here, who is a Republican and a very partisan one, whose name is John Husted, has backed off a little bit. He still is keeping – so he said that it's going to be equal in all polling places, but he is still keeping weekends closed. And during the early voting that worked so well in 2008, that is when a disproportionate number of African-Americans and others voted. We're on those weekends because, let's face it, you don't have a boss telling you can't go and vote. And so there's going to be a few hours open before and after the 9-to-5 day, but not many. It's like 8 o'clock to 7 on the longest days.
Now let me ask you. Let's go back.
That dissuade people from voting. There's just no doubt about that.
Let's go back to actually. Wait, hold on one second here. Sorry about that. Okay,
sure.
In any case. So let's go back to Philadelphia. In Philadelphia, from my understanding, as many as 750,000 citizens could be disenfranchised as a result of these restrictive voter registration laws, or voter ID laws, I should say. What in particular are they requiring, Cliff, as far as voter identification there?
First of all, you're going to have to show up in person, and you're going to have to bring all these different forms of identification to get a voter ID. I mean, really, the biggest barrier to this is that there are people that have jobs and have things to do, mostly that involve working, and don't have cars, because Philadelphia is a city much like for people who lived in New York or Boston or others, where there's very good public transportation, you use transportation, but also obviously having a car in cities like that is a luxury and much more expensive, and parking is more expensive. So you may be one of these people who live so far away that you've got to take trains, planes, and automobiles, essentially. I mean, you have to take the train and the bus and whatever to get there. And, most people can't leave work to go an hour in one way or another. I mean, when I lived in Philly, I worked on a congressional race, and I had to take the subway an hour and a half away to get there every day and to get back. It's a pretty big city. So in the end, just getting these IDs is the toughest thing of all, because people have to get there to do it. And that, of course, is a way to throw up a barrier for people to be able to vote.
Now, in Philadelphia, or in Pennsylvania, I should say, it appears as though, according to my research, that it's about a 3-3 split right now with respect to the court, and that there is perhaps a swing voter who's Republican, but maybe a little bit more moderate. What are you hearing regarding that?
Same thing. There's one judge. It's 3-3 because there's a seven judge court, but one of the Republican judges has being indicted apparently for using state funds for campaigning.
Nice.
So it's down to 3-3, but the problem is that a 3-3 split leads the decision to stay in place. So if the Republicans hold all three of them, you can bet it'll probably be a lot like the Obama Affordable Care case, where there's a heck of a lot of pressure on all five justices to stay together, and John Roberts bucked that for a variety of reasons. In this case, these days, to pretend that the judiciary isn't as politicized as every other part of our society has become, it of course is. Anybody alive since Bush v. Gore and Citizens United and many other cases knows this. So the question is, will that Republican, what will be the pressures there? Will that Republican be willing to break with party and incur the wrath of certain
right-wingers? Which you would hope a judge would do, right? There should be no partisanship in judges. When is that vote going to happen? Do you know?
I don't know that. That I don't know. I think the court has to decide when to take it up, and I'm not sure they've announced that yet. If they have, I haven't seen it. So, but yeah, you're right. Of course there should be no partisanship in judges. But, this has been the right-wing project for the last 30 years, which is taking professionalism, taking the institutions that have, of our society, and politicizing all of them, the way they politicized the attorneys when Bush was in office, the way the media has been politicized to a point where there's a right-wing media that doesn't care about facts. I mean, we've seen this left and right, and the judiciary, of course, is even more startling, because in a democracy, the important function it plays, when you lose faith in that, and I wrote a post today about this, where I literally had to go, and as soon as I was looking at these cases, I was looking at whether the judges were Republicans or Democrats, and that's just ridiculous. That shouldn't be the way it is. But
you have to keep a tally. Unbelievable. Hey, listen, one last question, Cliff, too. As far as the Ohio situation, where does it stand right now about the early voting? Because I know that also was a big issue, that they're also trying to suppress the early voting efforts as well.
Yeah, well, that's what I was trying to refer to before is, you know, the early voting will now be open equally. That was the sort of directive given by the Secretary of State, a Republican, just yesterday, that it's going to be equal, so that they won't pull these shenanigans they're trying to pull where the Republican counties will be open later and on weekends. But at the same time, he also is not allowing, any voting on weekends beforehand. So a lot of that, that's what a lot of, particularly a lot of African American churches encourage their congregations to go and vote. And there seems to be it's a purposeful plan to close on weekends, which is the time when people would have the most access to early voting. And they're only extending by a couple hours the voting during the week during early voting. So 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. And I think 3 weeks beforehand, it starts being 8 a.m. to 7 p.m. But for anybody who works a long day, obviously that's going to deter some people from voting.
All right. Well, listen, we appreciate your time on the air today, Cliff. And people, if they want to get in contact with Cliff Schechter, you can go to his website, www.libertasllc.com. That's LIBERTASLLC.com. Cliff, thanks for your time on the air today.
Thanks so much for having me on.
All right. Thank you. Okay. 15 minutes after the hour, when we get back, your calls to Freedom Lines. 1-866. Where is it? Where's my number? 1-866-987-TOM, T-H-O-M. Back in a moment.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Okay, welcome back. 20 minutes after the hour. Currently, we're going to get to the Freedom Lines right now at 1-866-987-TOM. First up in the queue, holding the longest, I believe, is Mark from affiliate KTPK in San Francisco, California. Mark, welcome to the table.
Hi, Mike.
Hello.
I wanted to bring up the fact that Paul Ryan is the face of the new Republican Party, and that's what he represents. And what he represents is tax cuts for the rich and basically money for the war machine, and that is it. That's their priority, transferring wealth from the middle class and the poor to the rich, and funding the war machine. And the rest, no infrastructure, nothing to make America, you know, get into green energy, nothing good for the future of America. They're just interested in making their friends rich.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I mean, I wouldn't even call him the new face. I'd call him the new two-face, because that's basically what he is. He says one thing, and we know it's the complete opposite of what he really means when he's out there in front of the American public saying that he wants to save Medicare, he wants to create jobs, he wants to help the middle class. I mean, they're completely the opposite ideas of what they're really trying to propose, Mark. And I think, what do you think? Do you think the American people are going to see through this, guys, through this ruse that they're propagating?
I really hope so, because I think it's going to be devastating to this country if this guy has anything to do with writing the tax code or anything to do with our government. It's going to be just devastating for this country, the both of them. I'm hoping America does see, if you look at his record and see that he's one of the, you know, he's in Congress, which has the worst, probably the worst Congress record in our history.
And the worst approval rating, too. They have one of the worst approval ratings.
Absolutely terrible. You look at his voting record, absolutely awful. He created the debt that we have now, and he wants to increase it. There's nothing about this guy that he should, he's not really, to me, he should not even be credible enough to run for any office. On his record alone, he is a goddamn disaster.
No, I agree with you. All right, well, listen, we appreciate your time. Thanks, Mark, and thanks for being patient on the air. Thank you. Okay, that's Mark calling in from San Francisco, California. Let me get next to, let's see, let's go to Vi. Vi is calling from Donovan, Maryland, wants to talk about what's happening in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, Dr. Mike, hey, good to talk to you.
Likewise.
I'm calling from Missouri.
Oh, Missouri. Okay.
Todd Aikman country.
Oh, there you go. Yes,
hey,
it says M.
My comment was you were talking about those venture capitalists a little bit early. And my
the vulture capitalists.
That I really think they're like vultures, and they really that's what they should be called, is vulture capitalists.
Yeah,
that's
no, there's
what
no
I really
doubt.
Think. But what about, Dr. Mike, and then I'm going to take my answer off the, or my comment off the air, okay?
Sure.
Pennsylvania, Pennsylvania. People there have got to wake up and get registered to vote, Dr. Mike. Hey, they are going to try to take Pennsylvania from us, just like they took Florida back for Bush.
Sure.
Okay. All right. Listen. First time.
I appreciate that call, Vi, and I'll comment on that for you right now, because what Vi is talking about is so important. I don't know if people saw this recently, Eric. They looked at an analysis of people who are not registered to vote currently. And if I'm not mistaken, I think it was close to like 90 million people in this country.
That's crazy.
Right now, who are eligible voters are not actually registered to vote quite yet. And of those voters who are not registered, 2-1 when they did the poll favor Obama. So if you want to talk about actually winning an election, all people need to do.
It would be a landslide.
It would be a landslide. I mean, honest to God.
Just register to vote.
Just register people to vote. I mean, I know they spent a lot of this money on campaign advertisements, media, buying airtime in different TV markets, radio markets, et cetera. But the bottom line is, if I were running a campaign and I knew that 2-1, there's tens and tens of millions of people out there,
you'd be going after those people.
I would totally. And you know who was a big advocate of that? Was Paul Wellstone. Paul Wellstone was always of the grassroots. My dad's always been a big fan of grassroots. Get the common folk involved. Get out there, press the flesh, get people engaged. And see, Obama knows how to do this, because one of the things that he did very well prior to entering Congress was that he was an activist. He was a community organizer. And I think that's, quite frankly, where Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan underestimate this president. This president was very successful in the campaign in 2008, getting out the vote, mobilizing grassroots constituencies across many platforms, many demographic areas, and was ultimately the victor. So that is so much of untapped potential. I saw something last night on Facebook, and there was a picture, okay, and it said, if 99% of the people voting in this country, it wouldn't matter what the 1% do or what the 1% want. And that is so true. And that's always been my point as well, is that, look, we could be very upset and very angry about the Koch brothers. We could be very upset and angry about Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan lying and propagandizing things and not being honest and truthful with the American people. But the bottom line is this. If all eligible voters in this country exercise their constitutional right to vote, there wouldn't be a problem, because I do believe, based off of those numbers in the poll, 2-1 favor Obama, you get those people out there and get them engaged, then liberalism wins, progressivism wins. This is why we just heard from Cliff Schechter how so many people in the Republican establishment are trying to disenfranchise the progressive liberal electorate by having these harsh, restrictive voter registration rules, by making it more difficult for the constituents of the Democratic Party, minorities, African Americans, Latinos, working moms, you know, you name it, they're doing everything within their power to make sure it is so difficult for these people to vote. So this is why I encourage everybody, go out there, go to your local state election officials, get registered, vote, and if 99% of the people get out there and do that, guess what? You will be seeing a new America that truly, truly promotes liberty and freedom and democracy for all. Listen, when we get back, more of your calls here live on the Tom Hartman program, 1-866-987-TOM, T-H-O-M. Back in a moment.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman program. Call 866-987-THOM.
All righty, welcome back. 34 minutes after the hour, a little Diana Ross now, right? I'm coming out. Isn't that is? Or no?
I don't know.
That's what it sounds like. In any case, let's get back to the Freedom Lines. Dr. Mike Newcomb sitting in here on the line right now for Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman program, and we are broadcasting from Phoenix, Arizona, 1480 KPHX. That's our Valley's Progressive Talk. Believe it or not, we do have a full station here, Eric, of Progressive Talk.
Right in the heart of Arizona.
Right in the heart of the kooky town of...
The Lion's Den.
The Lion's Den of radical conservatism. And Tom is actually part of our family, 3 hours every day here on the air. We appreciate that, and Tom being part of the KPHX family. Let's go next to Texas. We got a caller from Abilene, Texas, and wants to talk about reelecting an anti-American person. This guy's name is Larry from Sirius, and I'm not really sure if he is Sirius, but Larry, welcome to the table.
How you doing?
I'm doing well, Larry. So what's on your mind today?
I'm just curious why you want to reelect the most anti-American president we've ever had.
Well,
I mean,
I would beg to...
hates this country. He's spinning us into oblivion. He's keeping unemployment high. He's trying to do everything he can to keep, you know, unemployment high. Mm-hmm. And then you call Romney and Ryan liars when you got the biggest liar sitting there in the White House? I mean,
let me ask you, are you serious? Yeah, I am serious. So, Larry, why do you actually feel Obama hates America? What's his goal? I mean, if you're...
Because he's a foreigner.
Yeah, what's your premise? If he hates America, what's his goal?
Who said he's a foreigner?
No.
All the right wing.
No, that's my producer there. That's not voices in your head. That's somebody actually in the mic. But, hey, listen, so tell me, so what do you think his goal is then? If he hates America and he's anti-American, what does he want to do then? Why does he want another 4 years?
He wants to change us into a communist socialist country.
Do you think his secretive goal is to do that?
I don't think it's secretive at all. If you look at his agenda and the way he's trying to take everything, that is clearly his goal. And if you guys want that, you've got countries like China that are already well-established as socialist countries. Y'all can go move there instead of forcing this crap down our throat and driving us...
And driving you where?
Into bankruptcy. This country is going bankrupt because, okay, granted, all politicians, but you guys keep wanting to spend and spend and spend. You've got to cut programs. Paul Ryan, his cuts are minor compared to what has to happen. You've got to cut this.
Let me ask you this, and then we'll get some of the other calls. All right, but I'm a physician here in Arizona, and I believe that it's a right for all people to have health care and that we should treat all our fellow brothers and sisters with compassion and kindness and give them access to good, affordable health care. When you say cut programs, are you agreeing with Romney and Ryan that we should cut out, you know, Medicare, we should cut out Medicaid? Is that what you agree?
Well, Obama's the only one that's actually cut, what, $700 billion from Medicare already?
Yeah, but I know you...
With his unconstitutional health care, act.
Well, first of all, it's not unconstitutional. I don't know if you follow the news, but the Supreme Court, which is the highest court in the country, actually ruled that it was indeed constitutional. So I wasn't sure if you heard that or not. But
well, they're
in
not
any
always
case,
right.
I know they're not always right. They definitely are not always right.
I mean,
when they had separate.
It's okay to kill human beings.
Yeah. Well, that's another topic for another. Yeah, but in any case,
so, no, they're not right. It is not constitutional. I'll tell you what. If you want to make me buy something.
Yeah, Larry, do you know that your state and your governor has executed more people with the death penalty than anybody else? I mean, do you consider that a pro-life stance? I mean, are you proud as a Texan that you kill more people? We could take all the states in the United States of America and look at the death penalty, and you in your state, Texas, combined kills more people combined than everybody else. Even more than people in Iran.
You're more worried about murderers and their life than you are about innocent unborn children.
Oh, so you're pro
about the innocent unborn children, and you're sitting here arguing with me. Oh, you killed all these murderers.
Killing is.
So do you believe in Jesus Christ?
I do.
And can you quote me anywhere in the New Testament where Jesus Christ talked about killing murderers?
No.
Okay,
where he said you can't?
Thank you very much there. Appreciate that. Okay, in any case, Eric, it's just unbelievable. You know, I mean...
No, but the Bible does talk about stoning women for no reason and killing all sorts of people for no reason.
But they selectively pick out what they want. But just to dispel this myth, okay, because he's obviously somebody who watches Fox News or conservative talking outlets. But the bottom line is that $717 billion that they're talking about in Medicare. Let me just tell people for the record what this is about. I was going to talk about this on the show tomorrow a little bit more in depth, and I actually have some audio that I'll share with you from Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan. They're like one hybrid. It's like the heads are just like fused together now. They're like Siamese twins, you know, two heads
like
coming out.
Angelina.
Yes, one body. But the bottom line is this, okay? The 700 plus billion dollars that Obama, quote unquote, as Mitt Romney likes to say, robbed from Medicare, raided the Medicare fund. First of all, you would think fiscal conservatives would be happy, Eric, that the president is actually cutting wasteful spending, you know? So the president cuts $700 billion of waste out of the program. And what those particular things were, and I'll get in more detail later, but suffice it to say, it had to do with overpayment to private insurance companies, things like Medicare Advantage that were getting more money than other people. And Obama said, why are we paying these people more money to care for our patients when they're not giving additional benefits? Like, you know, why should we just line the pockets of the CEOs?
Just give them cash
right.
for nothing. Money
giving
for nothing.
Money for nothing, which is what conservatives hate, right? They hate giveaways.
Right.
They hate social welfare.
Pull
but
yourself up by your bootstraps.
Bootstraps. Yeah, well, why doesn't that apply to the big Fortune 100 CEOs
because
and those companies?
They're the ones who own those companies. They run those companies. That's why.
Right. So it's okay to give those people hundreds of millions and billions of dollars for free, for not doing anything.
But not some poor homeless guy on the street.
Right, who's down and out on their luck and basically lost their job for a bad economy. So that's one of the first things that Obama said, is that I'm not going to give money for nothing, okay? So you want me to give you money to deliver health care? You're going to have to earn it. You have to prove it. You're going to have to show me that you're doing something. Show me that you're going to do something beneficial for these beneficiaries. So that's where billions of dollars came out. You know, other things that they're looking at in that particular care, Eric, is to reallocate some of the payments, okay? It's fraud and abuse. You know how there's a lot of fraud and abuse in America?
Oh, yeah.
There's fraud and abuse in Medicare, too. There's people out there stealing people's Social Security numbers.
Right, billions of dollars.
Billing for medical services that have never even occurred, okay? Obama said, guess what? I'm going to be tough. The law is the law. I'm going to go out there and fight corruption, fraud, and abuse in the Medicare system. And because he put a system in place, he's able to save now and cut out spending from fraud and abuse. Again, billions and billions of dollars. Okay? So you would think Republicans and Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan would
like
applaud this.
Right.
Like, hey, the president's taking a tough stand on free giveaways. The president's taking a tough stand on fraud and abuse. And on top of that, what the president's doing with efficiency, right? They always talk about the free market and how the free market has to be efficient. The invisible hand of Adam Smith has to make sure that there's efficiencies in the free market such that the most productive outcome is out there, right? Well, that's what Obama's doing, too. He's now taking a lot of the inefficient use of those dollars and saying, guess what? If we're paying, for instance, I'll just give you an example. Say we're paying $1 billion every year to do heart bypass surgeries. Well, let's not put all that money into that. Let's put, a half a billion into preventive care.
Right.
So people eat better diets and they get their cholesterol checked and they get their blood pressure checked. And he's saying that, guess what? Those people who work together in the communities, doctors and hospitals and nursing homes and health care providers and home health people, if you work together and you're more efficient, then guess what? We're going to give you some bonuses. We're going to give you incentives actually, to do well. Look, they're very interested in giving teachers merit pay based off of how students do, how well they do on their tests. But when it comes to actually pay to healthcare providers for getting better outcomes, less heart attacks, less cancer, less things along those lines, then guess what? The Republicans don't want to do that. So Obama took those $700 billion of waste and fraud and abuse and inefficiency, and then nobody did with those $700 billion, Eric. He plowed it back into the Affordable Care Act to support the programs I talked to you about, the efficient programs, the healthcare maintenance, making sure that women can get mammograms and, get their annual PAPs and obese people can get put on good diets and have counseling, et cetera, versus Paul Ryan, the liar that he is, and Mitt Romney, the liar that he is, saying that Obama raided the fund. He didn't raid the fund. He cut out the waste and then replowed those monies back into the Affordable Care Act to make it a better system. Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan want to take that $700 plus billion, cut it out, and you know where that money's going?
Into their pockets.
In essence, friends'
pockets.
They're going into tax cuts for millionaires. That's what they're going to do. They're going to take the $700 billion and then give that money to the people that we talked about at the beginning of the program, the guy who makes $145 million a year as a CEO.
Money.
Right. They're going to take that $700 billion and you want to talk about redistributing the wealth. They're going to redistribute that $700 billion to the upper income earners so that rather than putting it back into the healthcare system so that it's a better system so that we, the people, everybody, Republicans, Democrats, Libertarians, everybody alike benefits from it, they're going to take that and screw the American people and give it to the crony capitalists at the top of the pecking order as far as the socioeconomic ladder goes. It's absolutely immoral, unethical what they're doing, and don't believe Mitt Romney. Don't believe Paul Ryan for a second. They are, look, I don't cavalierly use this word, lying. They are lying to you. I'm telling you as a doctor, as a physician, they are lying to you. Obama's making Medicare leaner, meaner. He extended the life expectancy by almost a decade by these programs. Look, when we get back, we'll get to your calls at 1-866-987-TOM. Stay with us.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
All righty, welcome back. 50 minutes currently after the hour. Dr. Mike Newcomb sitting here. For Tom Hartman, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. My friends, we got the board packed right now. Everybody from all across the country waiting to weigh in with their thoughts. But before we do that, we are going to get to Talk Radio News Service, and we have former Congressman Bob Ney on the line. Bob, welcome to the table.
Hello, how are you?
That's good to have you here today.
Nice to be there.
Yeah, so what's happening? Give us the updates.
Well, you know, the whole issue seems to be the M-word these days, Medicare. Of course, with the selection of Paul Ryan, one would imagine that that will be the issue. Mitt Romney has kind of come to terms with the fact that he now agrees with parts of Paul Ryan's budget. And I say that because, you know, at some point in time, Mitt Romney was not in tune with that whole thing. But I think it raises a whole debate now, of course, on Medicare. The Republicans would like to keep it to the economy. But I think the Medicare debate is something that Ryan, again, officially kind of waded into by talking about it yesterday. But they're going to have to address it. They can't, you know, he's on the ticket. You can't run away from that one.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Yeah. No doubt about it.
The interesting story today, too, is the immigration. You know, a lot of people are saying, well, the president did an executive order and changed immigration. He didn't. There was a policy on the books about children of illegals who are illegal under the, you know, the terms of the law, and that's been on the books. So the president did not do an executive order, but President Obama did do basically a policy clarification. So in Chicago alone, 13,000 some people lined up. They were not, you know, arrested, as some people said they would be arrested. They weren't, and they're applying through a whole process now in terms of education and just some military service that they may do on a path, you know, to being able to remain here with no problem. State of Arizona, the governor did come out and she said, oh, no, we're not going to accept this. We're going to ask for, you know, we're going to deny driver's license, et cetera. I think this all points back to the fact that eventually got to be a national solution to this thing.
What's going to happen with the governor, though? Does she have the authority, Bob, to actually deny driver's licenses despite the president's order or directive?
I don't know how she can do it. I mean, she can do it, and it's going to cause a whole court battle. But I don't know how, you know, you supersede somebody going through a legitimate federal process, which is what this is, whether anybody likes it or not. It is a legitimate federal process that's been on the books. So she can do it, and it'll cause a court battle. And that's why I think eventually this will have to fall into the realm of the Congress eventually to, sure, you know, make it clear of what the national policy will be. But she can do whatever she wants. It'll probably go through hideous court battles.
Yeah, unfortunately, Congressman Ney, I live here in Arizona, and so we're broadcasting for Tom today from Arizona. So we are at the epicenter of all this crazy cuckoo radicalism.
We watch, you know, my home state's Ohio, and from D.C. to Ohio, where else, we do watch Arizona and what's going on with this issue. Because the first out of the box after this policy change, of course, was Arizona. With the governor and her statements.
Well, fortunately, Senate Bill 1070, at least three of the major provisions in that discriminatory bill have been deemed unconstitutional by the court. So we got one more to kick out, but it's not going to stop them. They're going to keep, like as you said, doing whatever they want and basically getting into these legal battles.
Sure, and that's why I think, again, there's got to be, you know, some type of federal solution. And also, by the way, government regulators issued a final set of safety rules for offshore drilling yesterday. So they fine-tuned a series of emergency measures put in after that BP oil spill. The oil industry's pouring over it and not exactly happy, but I think that today's actions will be good for the environment. And the Director of Bureau of Safety and Environment Enforcement, I think they took some, you know, good thought into these rules.
Okay, well, listen, Congressman Ney, we appreciate your time here on Talk Radio News Service and keeping us updated with the daily news segment.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay, let's get back to the Freedom Lines right now. We're going to go line number four here. I think we got Jim on the line from Las Vegas, Nevada. He's been holding very patiently, wants to talk about Sheldon Adelson, the casino mogul. What's happening?
Hey there, Dr. Mike. Hey, I want to talk about voter fraud. And
yes.
That guy from Texas, he was very misinformed, but he was right. The Supreme Court is not always right. And
I agree. Plessy versus Ferguson. I mean, come on, there's lots of things. Women couldn't vote.
Well, Citizens United, who Anthony Scalia made the majority opinion. Now, last week, Mitt Romney was in Israel with Sheldon Adelson, who's already given $20 million to Newt Gingrich. Now he's
right.
giving money to Mitt Romney's campaign. Now they're visiting in Israel, which Sheldon Adelson here in Las Vegas, he wants to go to war with Iran through Israel. He does. It's known fact. Now, day before yesterday, Paul Ryan, the vice president candidate, met with Sheldon Adelson, secretive, away from the media, to talk about financing. Okay, now the Supreme Court Justice Anthony Scalia is coming to town to meet with Sheldon Adelson on September 5th. There is a definite conflict of interest with this.
They don't care. I mean, honest to God, they could care less, Jim. I mean, they are so open and transparent now about them trying to rig the system, trying to take control of our democracy, to take control of the executive branch, to take control of the judicial branch, the legislative branch. I mean, they are so in your face nowadays, and this is why people got to get out there and vote, Jim, because if they don't get out there and vote, like I said earlier, if 99% of the people in this country voted, it wouldn't matter what the 1% wanted.
Dr. Mike, I'm with Move On Las Vegas, and we register voters every day. We're going to gay bars, straight bars. We're going to the bus stops to register
Beautiful.
People to vote. Because
Beautiful.
They don't understand how important this is. And that guy from Texas, and I'm glad you explained where that $716 billion is coming from. And it's from
right.
people like my neighbor that don't want government health care, but they're going to get, Advantage. Medicare Advantage.
Yeah, Medicare Advantage. Yeah, no doubt about it. Hey, Jim, I got to run. I appreciate the call. Hey, one quick question, though. You're an East Coaster. I can hear it in your voice.
Yes, New York, Doc.
I got you. All right. See you later, brother. Thank you. I could always hear the always hear the accents here. Okay, listen, it is now 57 minutes after the hour. Back at the top with more of the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Okay, welcome back to hour number three here. This is the good Dr. Mike Newcomb sitting in for Tom Hartman. Yesterday, today, and we'll also be concluding the week tomorrow, Friday. So we appreciate everyone's support, everybody calling in. It's been a lot of fun doing the program, and also a special thanks to Tom for the opportunity to do as such. Now, listen, still going to get the Freedom Line, so stay with us, my friends. We're going to get to you in a second at 1-866-987-THOM. But before we do that, we have a special guest on the line. His name is Representative Ruben Gallego, and he's actually from Arizona, as in I am. from Arizona as well, and we're going to talk about the DREAM Act, and I'm sure many of you have heard about this. So let's just get Ruben on the line. Representative Gallego, how are you?
I'm good, doctor. Nice to hear from you again.
Well, likewise, likewise. You've been on the show locally, and now you're actually speaking to a national audience today.
Yeah, it's good to hear you off on the national audience.
Yes, yes. So listen, tell people first and foremost about the Deferred Action Program for DREAM Act eligible young adults. Give our listeners an overview of what that act's about, and then we can get into our governor, Jan Brewer, and what she's trying to do to undermine the president's directive.
Right. So, you know, for years, the Democratic Party, and especially led under President Obama, and even in the past led by some Republicans, there has been a movement that to basically say, look, we may not agree on comprehensive immigration reform. The one thing we do agree on is that children that have been raised as Americans that were brought over without their consent by their parents should have some kind of consideration and should be given the right to be become citizens if they fulfill some of the following qualifications. If they join the military, if they're in school or if they're graduating school, they have some kind of trade. So that was called the DREAM Act, the DREAM Act movement. And there was a bill that was introduced back in 2010, towards the end of the session, trying to do that. And for the first time in long time, many of the previous sponsors of the DREAM Act, largely Republican senators, bolted on it and actually filibustered and were able to stop the DREAM Act bill. And this, unfortunately, really affects a lot of young people because we have young men and women that are hitting the age of 18, and they're realizing two things. Some don't even know that they're not here in this country in a legal manner.
Right.
And they're hitting 18, and some of them are going and trying to join the military. And I've heard this from a couple of young men because, you know, I'm an Iraq War veteran and Marine. So a lot of young men and women that want to join the Marines do come and talk to me, and they come horrified to find out a lot of times that, A, that they're not here legally in this country, and, B, that they're not going to fulfill their dream of serving their country.
Sure.
And then also just looking at, you know, the kind of workforce we need, you know, there was one study that said that I think about 40% of the DREAM Act kid population is majoring in some kind of STEM-funded education, STEM being science, technology, engineering, and math, the kind of knowledge that we need basically to expand
the knowledge workers
in the next couple of years. So we're investing all this money in these kids that are American in all forms except for the fact that they don't have the right paperwork. And sometimes these kids were getting picked up, and because of our antiquated immigration system, we're being sent to countries that they knew nobody from. They knew nobody there. Some of them didn't even speak the language, and this is not just Mexico we're talking about. But if you talk to Governor Brewer and the rest of the Arizona Republican Party, they think everything has to do with Mexico. But we were deporting people to all parts of the world, and they have no connection there, and it was very unsafe. And I think the president finally frustrated with a lot of the intransigence of the Republican Party, decided to take an executive order and pass an initiative called the Deferred Action. And what it is, essentially, is it gives DREAM Act students that fulfill certain requirements. You have to be under the age of 30. You had to have been brought here without your consent.
And older than 15, too, right?
And over the age of 15, correct.
Right.
And you had to have a high school degree. And so there's a lot of steps. And no major crimes. So this is a very, very, very strict, and you essentially have to fill out paperwork in turning yourself in to ICE. And in return, ICE will process you and give you a two-year waiver, and you can work within those 2 years to establish yourself and establish your employment history. And, the president, like all of us, are hoping that with that, you know, movement, and with the proof that, you know, finally that these DREAM Act kids are going to be a great aid to society, that we may be able to convince Republicans to get on board with a plan that they used to support.
Right, right. Let me just clarify, too, so for our listening audience, Representative Gallego, that it has to be an undocumented immigrant between 15 and 30 years of age who's lived in the United States continuously for the last 5 years.
Yes.
You could not have any conviction of a felony or a significant misdemeanor.
Correct.
As you mentioned, you have to have graduated from high school or earned GED as well, and then or served in the military. And then you can apply, as you said, for that two-year work authorization. So let me ask you this just to clarify some points, too, here, because our Governor Brewer came out last night with her own sort of directive and characterized for the listeners what she did, and does it have any binding nature, or is it much ado about nothing?
It is much ado about nothing, but it just tells us really the kind of Republican Party we're dealing with. Look, we've had a state directive for a long time, and it has been consistently made clear by many of our allies in the DREAM Act movement that while the government can give you certain rights, a lot of rights there are still left at the state level, such as giving of certain benefits, right?
Sure.
And this has been, this goes back to propositions that were passed and years ago. The governor basically used the opportunity to reissue an executive order that was already standing, that had been standing for years, and she did it on the day that a lot of our DREAMers were getting their application for the first time. Essentially, nothing changes because, again, the law is already on the books, but she really used a political opportunity and in a cynical move took away what should have been a great day for a lot of our young men and women that are DREAMers in this country, just to basically take her opportunity to you know, cause another rift with the president, and at the same time really just rile up the base of the Republican Party that doesn't want to see comprehensive immigration reform and at the core is anti-immigrant and anti-Hispanic.
No doubt about it. Well, let me ask you this then. As far as the driver's license is concerned, because that to me, I wasn't quite sure based off the governor's edict, and I know there's certain laws on the books here at the state level in Arizona, what can the DREAMers do under the president's directive? What can they not do under the governor's directive? And is there any gray area between the two?
Yeah, and there may be some gray area. I mean, this is all new to a lot of people, and this is the kind of stuff that, you know, will be decided by the courts and could have been decided, you know, in a little more hospitable manner.
Sure.
But, you know, the
like driver's license.
Yeah, the driver's license.
The DREAMers?
I think that may be up in the air. I'm not entirely 100% sure. But, you know, DREAMers are still, you know, have a right to be in this country and in Arizona.
Right.
And they can go get jobs.
Right.
So.
Can the employer of the DREAMer provide benefits if they so choose to the DREAMer?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. If the employer is a private employer, absolutely. They could provide all the benefits, you know, and there are certain rights that are always protected whether you are here in this country as an undocumented person or not. You know, if you're under 16, you're still allowed to go to school, to high school.
Right.
You have to have access to college. Now, you may have to pay different rates, which is, you know, another issue, but there are still some enumerated rights but there are certain benefits that cannot be taken away that's been established by the Supreme Court law. So there's a lot of questions still up in the air. But the most responsible thing to do, the way to show true leadership was not to act the way that Janet Brewer act.
Right.
You know, using a politically cynical move. And this is why the Republicans are failing and President Obama is winning the Latino vote by such overwhelming numbers because Brewer represents the worst of the Republican Party in the community.
All right, Representative Gallego, we got to run for our break, but I appreciate your time. Thanks a lot.
You have a good one.
All right, bye-bye now. Okay, 15 minutes after the hour, back with your calls in a moment.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. 20 minutes after the hour. I love the music, Eric. I love these rejoinders.
Yeah, they're picking some goodies today.
Yeah, it gets you jazzed up. I like good rejoinders and good cue music and things along those lines. But in any case, 20 minutes after the hour, we're going to get to the calls. As I told you off the air, Eric, we are now going bareback for the remainder of the program, which means in radio lingo that we are not having any further guests.
We are guestless.
It's just me, the mic, and the audience, you the people, we the people out there for the remainder of the program. So let's have at it at 1-866-987-TOM, T-H-O-M. That's 1-866-987-8466. Let's see. Let's go first to line number three. Let's go to Paul, listening on station KPOJ. He's from Woodinville, Washington. Paul, welcome to the table.
Hi, Dr. Mike. How are you?
Every day's a blessing.
That's right. So much has come up since I've been on the line, but I guess I'll stick with voter ID. But I wanted to.
Well, you can stick whatever you want. Don't feel confined. You can. We can handle more than one topic at a time.
Well, I was going to say quick about Mitt Romney. You were talking about CEOs making so much money, and it occurred to me, and I've been saying to my friends, is that, you know, he calls himself a businessman, but when I think about a businessman, my brother's a businessman. He sells high-end bicycles. My friend is a businessman. He sells wholesale sports equipment. Mitt Romney, are you trying to tell me that he knows everything from medical waste and Stericycle to steel? I mean, he really doesn't know anything about the businesses that he owns, because all he is a financier capitalist. He only knows about the numbers on the books. He doesn't know anything about the business.
That's obviously evident in his interactions with people too, because, you know, you could just, he's so awkward. I mean, do you ever see how he tries to just fit in? I don't know if you ever saw that video when he was out in, I think in Michigan. Oh, I just love Michigan. I love the trees.
He's from Michigan. He can't relate to the people, and I'm from Michigan originally. But,
we'll get back to it in a second. I want to play a clip for you just to show you how out of touch he is. You heard the song, Who Let the Dogs Out, right? Okay.
Yeah.
Well, he was in Florida a little while back. Remember this, Eric? He was in Florida, and he goes out to meet a bunch of black youths sitting in, you know, just standing in the street. He starts asking, like, where's the cameras and this and that. It's just a photo op. But you could see he's, like, visibly uncomfortable with doing it. So you ready, Eric?
Relate.
Yeah. Listen to what he does. Here we go. Let's play this. All right. Oh, we'll have to go back and play. We have to get that there. It's not set up properly. But anyway, I'll play it for you later. But go ahead. Go to what you're saying about the voter in 1789.
Right. Well, to say that we need voter photo ID now, I guess these people who are advocating this are really suggesting that every election since the first election in this country in 1789 has potentially yielded fraudulent results based on voter fraud. Yet they cannot point to a single election. And by the way, in 1789, they realized that your signature, as we now know, is pretty much tantamount to your fingerprint. You cannot fake somebody else's signature convincingly. And the conspiracy, the huge conspiracy that would be necessary to pull that off, yet they can't point to a single election in history where voter fraud probably turned the results. But there are two elections in history. In 1876, Rutherford B. Hayes stole the election with election fraud, and the election of 2000 was probably election fraud, too. So election fraud is much more dangerous than voter fraud, and we've never needed an ID before, so they're creating a problem out of nothing. They're saying that, there must have been in history. They're correcting nothing. They're correcting no problem because they've never identified that any election has potentially been turned by voter fraud.
And that's what happened.
It's much more dangerous.
And that's what you had alluded to in Pennsylvania. The judge who ruled on that restrictive voter ID law said, look, I know there's been no voter fraud here. I know that it doesn't exist, but I'm just going to let it go forward because the legislature has a right to make laws regarding the election. So, in other words, the case was – there was no foundation for the case, but he still let them go out and rig the system, which is why it's going to go to the Supreme Court in Pennsylvania. But it's absolutely, absolutely absurd. Listen, we appreciate your time on the air. I'm going to get to the other one, so thanks for being patient today. Okay. All right, Eric, I think I put the right audio output in here. I forgot to do that before the show. Yes, I got it. So are you ready now
for
Mitt Romney? This is how he dealt with a group of black youths. You got it? Can you hear it?
Who's got your camera, though?
Who let the dogs out?
I mean, talk about being uncomfortable. Who let the dogs out?
That's the only song you know.
Who?
Things black people like.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's a gross mischaracterization. Here we go again.
Who let the dogs out? Who?
I mean, that's horrible. I mean, it's absolutely horrible. I mean, he's so uncomfortable in his own skin. All right, let's get back to some of the other callers here. Let me see who's up next. I think we got Marie on the line from San Antonio, Texas. Marie, welcome to the table today.
Hey, Mike. Thanks for taking my call. I was explaining, I worked for the state of Texas for almost 20 years. And most of those years, I worked right next door alongside the Health and Human Services Office, which here in Texas, they determine eligibility for Medicaid and food stamps and temporary assistance for needy families and other state programs. And it was interesting to see the before and after in 2008-2009. The number of people that came in for help had increased significantly.
Wow.
And so many people who got hit hard started coming in for help. Now, some of these are six-figure salaries, $200,000 and more, have these, you know, million-dollar homes, would drive up in their SUVs and Lexus. And, you know, sometimes when you're so rich and doing so well, life happens. Catastrophic illness, motor vehicle accidents, just different things. Problems with kids.
I understand. Hey, listen, Marie, I got to run right now. I got a break, but I appreciate your perspective of things. Thanks a lot. Okay, we'll be back with more of the program in a moment. Stay with us.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Welcome back. 34 minutes after the hour. Our house, right? Isn't that what this
is?
They
just keep playing the hits.
In the middle of the street. This reminds me of the old college days. I'll tell you.
80s.
I'd like to just sometimes just listen to music. It's good. But in any case, we got some talking to do because we got the board full of callers right now. And I'm going to get to the first caller. It's Ray from San Antonio, Texas. Ray, welcome to the table today.
Hey, Doc. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I'd like to talk about the voter fraud in my home state of Pennsylvania. Right now, I'm a retired 23-year veteran from the Air Force. Mm-hmm. And I heard on the Martin Beshear show yesterday from Shaka Fatah, who is the representative there.
Congressman in Philly, yeah. Mm-hmm.
He mentioned on that show that if you wanted to vote and had your military ID and it had indefinite on it, that would be that you could not use that particular identification to vote.
Now, why is that?
I had not heard that, so I looked at my ID card, and sure enough, it has indefinite on it. So if I lived in Philadelphia again, then that would mean I couldn't vote.
But what does it mean when the military ID says indefinite? Is that how long you're in the military, or what does that mean?
No. That means it does not expire.
Oh, so
that means
that
card does not expire.
Oh, okay. So why would that not be a valid ID then?
Because according to the Pennsylvania law that the judge just upheld, if it says indefinite on it, then you cannot use that as a valid voter ID.
That's ridiculous. Isn't that absolutely ridiculous?
It is past ridiculous. I was thoroughly inflamed by that. My family, we're talking about going to Pennsylvania and joining everybody else to get folks registered and if we have to send money, you know, to help organizations to help folks get registered. Cause I just cannot believe I fought for this country for over 22 years. And now if I have this ID card, I cannot walk into my polling place and vote. It is absolutely absurd.
Well, Ray, look, welcome to the modern-day Republican Party, because guess what? They'll say they love your service, they love your patriotism, but guess what? If you happen to vote for somebody who's not a Republican, then they don't care. They don't respect your service, then you're out. And that's not what America's about. Look, you know, the difference is I saw this happen, Ray, with President Barack Obama just the other day, where he was out giving a speech, and he mentioned Paul Ryan's name, Congressman Ryan, and some people started to boo. They didn't do anything other than boo. And you know what the president did at that time? He stopped him and he said, listen, wait, this guy's a good man. He's a family man. You know, he's articulate. You know, see, that's the difference versus Mitt Romney has to say, this president's full of hate. He's full of divisiveness. He robbed Medicare. He raided Medicare. You see the difference? These are supposed to be the compassionate conservatives, but when it comes to actually walking the walk and talking the talk, they're complete hypocrites, right? And somebody like you served in the military. You put your life on the line for the American people. You know, I don't know whether you're an active combat or not. As far as I'm concerned, if you sign a contract with the military, you're literally signing a contract to put your life and your blood on the line for we the people. And as far as I'm concerned, once you do that, you deserve the respect, you deserve the honor, you deserve the praise, and you deserve the right to vote, period.
Period. I absolutely agree. Yes, we're going to leave Texas on maybe a week or two jaunt and go to Philadelphia, visit my family there, and see what we can do, because it's more than just saying it. You got to be willing to do something. I can tell you now that my family is in Philadelphia now, and they are out beating the doors down, trying to get folks registered. They are doing something, and we're talking about going there and helping them.
Do me a favor. If you do that, my email is mike@mikenewcomb, M-I-K-E-N-E-W-C-O-M-B, mike@mikenewcomb.net. I'm from Philadelphia as well. So, and my dad's out there. My dad, he's retired now, but he's a big union activist, and this kind of thing's right up his alley. So if you're going to get plugged in, you got your family out there, trust me, my dad, Ray, he can get out there and help you guys. So just email me if you want some help out there.
Oh, I definitely will.
All right, because we are the city of brotherly love, and we got to show that love out there.
We're going to show it.
Thank you, sir.
All right, thank you.
It's Ray from Sirius there, actually from San Antonio, Texas, listening on Sirius, opening up another Freedom Line at 1-866-987-TOM, T-H-O-M. All right, let's get to the next caller and keep going down the line. Next up is Corky. Corky calling from Rochester, New York. Corky, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Hello, doctor. I want to straighten this out with the entitlement program. I get sick and tired of them acting like using these key phrases that I'm getting something for nothing. I pay for Social Security, and I pay for Medicare. They're my insurance policy against getting old and getting sick. Now,
Correct. You
ain't giving me nothing. I paid for it. And now when you talk about these young kids, you want to switch them over, yet you're still taking money out of their check for Social Security and Medicare? You guys got to wait a long time, because you can't do that till a live person comes along that's already paid under the contract that you agreed to.
And you know what's interesting about that, Corky? You mentioned the fact that there seems to be a two-class system here. In other words, they're saying to the current retirees that, hey, we're not going to touch your Medicare, we're not going to touch your Social Security, but there's a big but for you younger folks, guess what? We are going to actually change things around. So my question, Corky, to them is this. Why is it good to just keep the current retirees under the same benefit plan for Social Security and Medicare, but it's not good for the younger ones? You see what I'm saying? If it's good for you guys now who are currently receiving the benefit, then why do you want to change it? See, the only reason they want to do that is they want to trick you, the elderly people who are getting the benefit now, to vote for them, and then once they get into office, then they can screw the young people, too. Because they know that there's more older people who vote than young people.
They got to change the language before they start collecting from the new generation.
You
can't collect the money under the guise we're going to give them something down the road and then change them. How would they like it if we changed their life insurance when they were on their deathbed? We can't pay that much.
Or their current health care benefit. They get Cadillac service, the congressmen and women and the senators. They get the best benefits in the world right now. So, I mean, look, I agree with you 100%, Corky. I appreciate your call. Thanks a lot. All right, that's Corky calling in right there. And it's, you know, unbelievable how they're really just trying to be the wolf in sheep's clothing. I mean, just totally, totally going out there and misrepresenting things. Okay, let's get back to the Freedom Lines here. Next up in the queue, I believe, is Pat calling from Arlington Heights, Illinois. Pat, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Yes, I'm so glad I discovered you on the Tom Hartman Show. And I'd just like to make a couple of comments. The first comment is I don't really understand how the individuals who are for the Republican Party, especially like this gentleman that was on earlier, who will benefit the least from a Republican administration can be pro the Republican Party. I can't comprehend that. I mean, it does seem to me as though the liberals do a little bit more investigation into facts and to truth, and the those individuals who are of the less than 1% that's so wealthy don't seem to do any investigation at all if they decide they're going to vote Republican. In addition to which, this is just a little commentary on life. How do these Republicans expect people to pull themselves up from their bootstraps when they don't even have any boots?
Right, or straps. No, Pat, I agree with you. But see, this is what's become part of the modern-day conservative movement. It's all about indoctrination of the masses. It's all about propaganda. It's all about dumbing down of America. Because if they can go out there, just like Big Brother in 1984, the Big Brother, the party, the mind speak, if they can brainwash enough people, which they've effectively done with Fox News and conservative talk radio, they've been able to brainwash the American public, dumb them down. Look, why do you think they don't like the university systems? Why do you think they don't like education? They know that if you have an ignorant population, Pat, as you had mentioned there, if the population, and when I say ignorant, I don't mean that in a belittling way. I go from the Latin ignoscere to not know. If you have a population that doesn't know and you can convince them that they don't know, then you start thinking for them. See, and that's why they don't like us liberals, because the liberals, we think for ourselves. And sometimes we fight amongst ourselves because we're rational beings. We think. But see, they don't want America to think. They want America to be dumb. And the dumber that America gets, then guess what? The more power, control, and leverage they have. And we're not going to have it, right, Pat? We're going to fight back. We're going to keep going out there, speak truth to power. And ultimately, I believe truth prevails, and I'm sure you believe the same, correct?
Absolutely.
All right. Well, listen, Pat, you have a blessed day, and it was nice talking to you.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Well, listen, we're going to get to some of the other callers here in a second, but we're going to be up against a break here, and that'll be the last segment for today. So the Freedom Express is pulling up to its final stop, its final destination for today, and some Freedom lines are now just opening up at 1-866-987-TOM. That's T-H-O-M, 1-866-987-8466. Definitely give us a call. We'll try to get you guys in. And don't forget, you can also check Tom out on the website, www.tomhartman.com. And Eric keeps – you say the Facebook, Eric. Eric keeps saying the 1480 Facebook.
Yeah, I want you to get it out there. Just if you want to – if you like Mike's show, if you like Mike filling in for Tom, visit our 1480 KPHX official Facebook page and like us.
There you go. And as we said, Tom is an integral part of our family here in the 1480 KPHX community, as he's on the air Monday through Friday, 3 hours each and every day here in Phoenix, Arizona, and he does a phenomenal job. So we'll be back with the conclusion of the program. Stay with us.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the
home. Okay, welcome back. 50 minutes after the hour, my friends. Let's get right to the Freedom Lines. I think first up in the queue is Armin. I think it's Armin from Bradenton, Florida, and he wants to talk about voter disenfranchisement. How are you?
Hey, I'm fine. You know what I really think, and I think that most people think the same thing?
Yes.
That's not on the inner circle, whether it's left or right at the top. I think they think that it's pathetic that we have over 300 million people in this country, and what they're giving us, the elite, are these two pathetic losers, from the one from the left and one from the corporate right. I think that's the truth. And we're not going to pull out of this. We're not going to pull out of this. We're treating people better, whether they're rich or poor, if they lay on their butt and they're not productive, as the people that get up and take responsibility.
Yeah, I don't necessarily.
Go ahead, sir.
No. I don't agree. I mean, I don't necessarily disagree with you that people should not be compensated for being lazy and laying on their butts. And I don't think anybody disagrees with that.
Whether they're poor, and the Republicans cater to the rich welfare crowd, and the Democrats, with everybody else's money, cater to the poor that don't want to take responsibility. And that's the reality, and that's the truth. We really need a second party in this country.
Third party.
No, we need it. We don't have a second party yet. These two parties are totally a tag team on the Potomac. Absolutely, they're a tag team because both parties, whether it's the left or the right, Republican or Democrat, the majority that they put in their tent on both sides is unsustainable economically, especially in the global economic system that we're going to have to compete in, because the other countries like China and Koreas and the Asian countries, they're not going to lay on their backs and wait for us to get our act together. They're moving forward. They can outproduce us. They can out-educate us for the money. Their healthcare system is 2 to 3 times cheaper.
And they're out-reproducing us, too.
They could come to this country. They could come to this country and take misfits in the Appalachia area and put them to work in factories producing high quality, when these great educated people from the United States that we've spent billions and billions of dollars to give tenure to are pathetic and failures. They can't even clean up their own curriculum or their own brethren.
All right, well, listen, hey, Armin, I appreciate your time, brother. I got to get to some of the other calls, but look, your perspective is always welcome. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Okay, that's Armin calling, and he was online. Let's go to the next caller here. It is Mark, and he is calling from Occupy Seattle. I didn't know they actually still had an Occupy Seattle movement going on. How are you, Mark?
Hey, Mike, it's good to hear you on the program. I'm a regular contributor. I'm also a journalist. People know me. My name's Mark Taylor Canfield. And, yes, there is an Occupy movement. We had a national gathering in Philadelphia, by the way, on July 4th. And I presented a Declaration of Independence from Wall Street. So I wanted to let you know that the one-year anniversary, actually, of the Occupy movement is coming up on September 17th. And there will be a lot of activities going on around the country, so I'm sure people won't be able to ignore that. But
no, we had a big Occupy movement here in Phoenix, too, that both Eric and I and the local station participated in.
Yes, I'm interested in AM 1480. I'm going to have to check out some of your programming online. But the reason I called in, actually, was to talk about a Huffington Post article, and actually I just wrote about this for Counterpunch, about Romney's and Bain Capital's connection to El Salvadoran death squad families. I think that that's a story that people really need to be looking at closely, and it has to do with the fact that when Bain was a startup company, Romney was able to raise $9 million, which was, according to Ryan Grimm, who wrote this article for the Huffington Post, that was 40% of the startup funds. And he's been able to tie the money to a bunch of families in El Salvador who were directly connected with the paramilitary death squads, and who one family especially was condemned by former U.S. Ambassador to El Salvador, Robert White. So I'm curious about your take on that and why maybe it's not something that people are talking about more, because I think it really goes to the right to the center of the of these issues concerning, you know, what I would call catastrophe capitalists, or, you know, people who take advantage of economic problems in other countries. We've got Bain Capital now that was funded by families who are responsible for assassinations. And I'm just wondering, you know, what the Romney campaign has to say about that.
Well, I'll tell you, it's the first that I've heard of this, but I did read a book in the past, and I'm sure you probably are familiar with it, called Confessions of an Economic Hitman by John Perkins. Are you familiar with that? Yeah, and it's similar kind of things where you have this sort of capitalism that just goes in and, you know, it's no holds barred and there's death squads and all kinds of crazy stuff happening. But look, this is why we have talk radio, and you've put it out there for the public to hear, and, you know, I'm sure people now will respond accordingly and Google it and find out, and I'll do a little bit more research as well. So we appreciate your time, Mark. Thank you very much.
I'll send you a link to Ryan's article.
Yeah, just send me a link, Mike at MikeNewcomb.net. I appreciate it, okay?
No problem. Thanks a lot, Mike. Bye-bye.
Thank you, sir. Okay, that's Mark Taylor Canfield calling from Occupy Seattle. And let's go next, because we do have a shortened segment here, and I want to try to get in as many people as possible, because that's what freedom's about. That's what talk radio should be about. Let's go next to Wayne on the line from KPOJ in Eugene, Oregon. How are you, Wayne?
Oh, very good, Dr. Mike. Pleasure to talk with you. I'm old enough to have worked in the medical field, basically doing ICU, ER technician, site work. But I worked before Medicare and Medicaid in the early 60s. And the way the elderly were taken care of in those days was if someone became too old to physically disabled because of their age, they went to the county long-term care facility at the county hospital.
Hey, Wayne, let me have you hold right there for a second. Call me tomorrow because I'm subbing for Tom tomorrow, and we only got 30 seconds left in the program, and I want to give you an opportunity to talk. So call tomorrow, okay?
You bet.
All right, we appreciate that. Listen, I thank everybody for participating in today's program. The Good Doctor will be back here in the seat tomorrow filling in for Tom. You've been listening to the Tom Hartman program for the last 3 hours, so as I always say, dream as though you'll live forever and live as though you can die today. Talk to you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to TomHartman.com.